Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
So a lot went on in the Toronto game. I told you about some of what stood out to me. Stacey, what stood out to you from the most recent win to take the streak to four over the Raptors?
Well, there's three things. The first one, I would say, we've talked a lot about Julius Randle, but again, I think it feels a lot more sustainable on both ends of the floor on offense. He's obviously, most of his points are coming from the rim or from three-point range. And he's not, I mean, yesterday he shot terrific from three-point range. You know, to see him go out on a heater like that at the beginning was great. But, you know, he didn't fall in love with it. He leveraged those threes to get some good looks, you know, some good opportunities inside the arc. And what was also very, very intriguing, you know, he made some great passes. You know, he flashes those Jokic-level passes. He's not holding the ball, and when he does, he's really reading and manipulating the defense in a way he wasn't in 2020-21. And on defense, I think he's been pretty, like, when you put Mitchell Robinson next to, like, Randall's doing his job. You know, there's, like, one or two times a game where, like, he'll see a guy in the corner. I think yesterday there might have been one time when it was, like, Siakam or someone in the corner and he just didn't close out. But that is the exception much more than the rule now. And a rare exception. And he's helped. He's been the Knicks defense has improved a lot. Grimes and Quickly have gotten a lot of credit, but Randall deserves a lot of credit too. And I think they all feed off each other. And I think that makes life easier for Mitchell Robinson. And I think Mitchell Robinson probably won't be an all NBA defender because of just how much talent there is at that position on defense in the NBA, but he's playing at that level. And I think Randall has helped there a lot. And the second thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, you mentioned that, you mentioned that the Raptors are not a great matchup for the Knicks. And I think a lot of that historically has been bad guard play, where, you know, they have, you know, the Raptors can throw these huge wings at our guards. They can keep them from the rim. The guards aren't dynamic threats from, they can't do all of one things, right? If it's a guy like Quickly, you know, he hasn't, in the past, he didn't punish the Raptors the same way by getting to the rim. Yesterday, you saw he was much more effective. But the bigger difference there is really Brunson, where Brunson on both sides is changes that equation where the Raptors aren't such a bad matchup for us. And in the last game, the Knicks lost, but I thought that for most of the game, they outplayed the Raptors, and the issues that the Raptors have given us in the past weren't as prevalent. Now, look, Brunson had five turnovers, so they're there. Like that kind of length and athleticism is always going to be an issue, and Brunson struggled a little bit. But I don't think he turned the ball over in the second half, and he was just able to stay calm and cool, whether it was a trap, whether it was, you know, guys jumping a passing lane. As he adjusted, he was just in control of the game, and he can get to whatever spots he wants. He can get that mid-range pull-up no matter what. So late in games, that is a huge game-changer for the Knicks. And on the other end, that's worth mentioning too. That might have been Brunson's best defensive game of the season. And in that sense, the Raptors are actually a good matchup for the Knicks because Brunson isn't the guy you want to guard Ja Morant or Trae Young or Kyrie Irving. Because, you know, the quicker guards, like Brunson is not as laterally agile on defense. Mm-hmm. Offense, he really relies more on change of speeds and craftiness and his handling more than just the sheer athleticism. So on defense, you know, obviously you don't have those options. But what he is also strong as a bull. And the Raptors repeatedly try to post him up with Scotty Barnes, and Scotty Barnes finished with 2 points. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work. And that wasn't like Kemba Walker, not to pick on Kemba Walker, but one team that did pick on Kemba Walker was the Raptors, because he is both small and skinny. Yeah, whereas Brunson at least has the strength to combat, and he's a very intelligent team defender. The third thing I wanted to mention, I realized I forgot a couple of things. The other things I'll mention is, on the Randall note, it was also encouraging that when Quickly kind of had it going at the end of the third, you know, Quickly, a sequence that really, if we were Raptors fans, this is what we've been like, same old Raptors, or this is what seems to happen to the Knicks every time. The Raptors had a Fred VanVleet free throw, 89% free throw shooter. The first time I can ever recall someone on another team missing a free throw, by the way. He misses. Quickly brings the ball down court with about 5 seconds left and forces a foul. The Knicks are leading by three at the end of the fourth. Psychologically, that's a bit of a win. I don't know how much that matters. I do know that, like, for example, that Christmas Day game against the Sixers, the Knicks outplayed the Sixers for three quarters. But, like, you know, the Sixers were the better team, and they did just enough to stay close. And then at the end of the third quarter, it was tied. And to me, psychologically, I was just like, after all that, we're tied. And then, then the Sixers started throwing the haymakers, and it's just like, at that point, you don't even have that edge, right? Mm-hmm. But I think what's important is, like, immediately coming out into the fourth, Randall was on the floor and Quickly ran three straight pick and rolls, which resulted in 6 points, right? The first one, he hit a floater. Second one, he drew a foul. Third one, he fed Hartenstein for what should have been a dunk. Hartenstein gets the misses, but Mitch is there for the rebound. Mitchell Robinson makes two free throws. That was pretty nice to see. What was nice was Randall stayed engaged, and he wasn't clogging up the lane. He wasn't demanding the ball from Quickly. He was happy to let Quickly run the show. Part of that might have been like fatigue, but I think that, I'm not saying that, you know, maybe a lot of people say, well, that's basic stuff. But what I'm saying is, I think Randall, my criticism of Randall is not necessarily that he was selfish or that he, he had to dominate the ball because of some, you know, psychological thing. I always thought those criticisms were a little unfair because I don't know the guy. I don't know what his mentality is. I don't know. But some people are just, they play a certain way. If you've played a certain way for many years, like, I've played basketball with people who are the nicest people, the most selfless people on the court. That's how they view the game, is that that's how they've played. And you can't really get someone out of their game very easily. So I always thought those were my bigger, like, my criticism was not like he's a bad teammate, he's selfish or whatever. It was more, I think, you know, just stylistically, it wasn't a great fit for what the Knicks ideally are, you know, for winning basketball. And he's changed that, one. And two, I think even at that time, it showed that, like, all of his, none of his teammates have ever had anything bad to say about Randall. Like, you can see him on the sideline. Yep. They all get along well with him. I don't think there's any issues there. So I wanted to throw that out there. And then, so points through, and then one other aside, I think it's worth shouting out Evan Fournier.
Absolutely.
You know, he's not a part of the Knicks' long-term plans. It was a good move to limit his minutes and start Grimes, but he's been a professional. When he hasn't played, he's been cheering on the bench. And, you know, of late, he's had to play more, and he made some clutch plays on defense yesterday. He had a couple of huge rebounds. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of huge rebounds where, by the way, Hartenstein was out of position. Not to shift the blame to someone else, but to say that, like, without Fournier, we probably gave up a couple of buckets that could have changed the game. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of big shots. For Fournier, it's usually rarely that was a stupid thing he did, right? It's usually physically being outmatched or something like that.
Yeah.
But just staying ready, having a good attitude, being a positive presence, and being able to call, do what your job is when your number is called, that's great to have that. And the third thing is to end on a negative note. The Knicks do have an issue at the end of games. I think an under-talked about or understated part of that is the fact that they're going with a short rotation. And I think fatigue, mental and physical, like, as much as some of these things seem like simple things, hit free throws, don't foul, like, those kind of things are supposed to be very simple. The reality is it's happened so much over the last few games. It seems like, I think that they should be better off when RJ and Obi get back. Because even, like, you can still criticize and say, well, Tibbs' offense is too stagnant late. And I think there's some truth to that. Like, I don't think they need to run the clock down to 2 seconds every time to take a shot. But it gets mitigated for the fact by the fact that Brunson can really make a lot of bad shots, right? So you don't need that. Mm-hmm. I think fatigue is a big issue, and I think that when the rotation lengthens, I think we'll see fewer of these things in late games. But as of now, it is a thing, right? And they nearly blew a game. They were up, you know, they were up 105-89 with less than 3 minutes left. There's no reason that game should be coming down to like late free throws and like, you know, mm-hmm. nervous moments, right? But it did. So those are my kind of main takeaways.
First, I want to assure the listeners that that is hopefully the last Hartenstein reference that you will hear on this podcast. I just don't have the heart to talk about that dude right now. He's like I don't want to pick on Hartenstein.
The heart to talk about that dude? Was that a pun or?
every game, man. That guy, he's killing me. He's killing me in these games.
He makes you want to get on the laptop and play The Sims?
A little bit. Well done.
You missed that one. Yeah. You see,
I got that one. I hated The Sims, but I like Jericho. And Hartenstein hurts because he seems like the type of player that, like, on paper, I would love him. Like, he's a backup big. He can pass. He has more shooting ability than the other two centers, however, whatever you think that shooting ability is. And I don't think he's someone who fails because of a lack of effort or a lack of care. I don't understand him. Even when the numbers said that he was rebounding pretty well, when I watch the games, like, I don't see it at all. And he's the one player this year that is consistently bothering me more than he is thrilling me. A couple other things that you mentioned that I want to touch on, as far as Randall and defense, like, I'm pretty sure already for me that the play of the first half season is the Randall chase down block against the Spurs. I think it was Josh Richardson. Yeah. I was sick and sitting back in my chair and have never been as certain of anything that was going to be 2 points going the other way for the Spurs.
That was a Randall turnover too, right?
Yes, it was. It was. So
he made the turnover. That shows his mental growth, right? Instead of hanging his head, he didn't complain to the ref. He didn't blame somebody else. Like, why did you come over and bring him?
Yep, that's exactly. I was like, who's he going to blame for that one? And then he starts running. And then part of me felt bad because I'm like, you know what? He's not going to get this, which is then going to make him figure, why should I bother next time? But then he got it. So I was very, very excited for that.
You look like LeBron on Iguodala, man. I'll go there. I'll go to that block. That's what he reminded me of.
You also just reminded me in some of what you were saying. I don't know if you had this with yourself when you would play sports. I've always been struck playing sports by how much a person's personality in real life is often the opposite or has nothing to do with who they are. So I had a friend growing up that we played basketball and baseball together. And in real life, like, this kid had like legit anger management issues, like was literally sent to anger management by the courts. But when we played sports, this kid never said a word, was just the most quiet, calm. And I was someone that in real life was like pretty quiet, introverted. But like when we played baseball, like more than once, the opposing team would have to complain to the umpire. Like I would play first base or catcher and I could not shut up, like trying to get them out of their heads, talking, like could never shut up. I'm struck watching the game sometimes. Like we have all these evaluations of who these players are. And I hate the body language thing because like you're saying, we don't know them. We don't know anything going on in their life. Nobody at work is necessarily who they are like in their real life. But it has struck me that as much as the fans have had complaints about Randall, particularly last year and a couple of years before that, I don't recall anything ever leaking from the, certainly nothing public. And I don't even remember even like the insinuation that someone had a problem with him, which I think is to his credit. And I think his teammates know, like you can make mistakes and that's different than necessarily being like, you're clearly a selfish person. And I have always liked that. Yeah, no one on this team has ever seemed to rile up the other players to the point that you ever heard like a gripe about it.
And that's also why, like, you know, there are times where he missed RJ a lot. And some of the people I really respect and who might be right about this, who knows, maybe there were things that got cleared up. I don't want to go definitive one way or the other, but I was like, it could be that he just missed them. because it doesn't seem like RJ dislikes him. It doesn't seem like Quickley dislikes him, right? He demands the ball sometimes. You know, like he got, there was a shouting, or not a shouting match, but like him and Fournier once were like animated and arguing once. Yes. And if it's not the Knicks, and if it's not, you know, a very scrutinized star who just got a big contract, maybe that's not even news. You know, I'm sure LeBron argues with people. I'm sure like a lot of these dudes do.
The Lakers used to have a guard, a pretty famous guard, who was not at all ashamed to like destroy his teammates on the floor in the, I mean, Swish Parker could have sued Kobe Bryant for like emotional yeah. distress. Like, and
there's a guy who wrote an article about that, like one of Smush's friends, or like not like an acquaintance of Smush's, but like were basically like some of it was pretty unfair. But
yeah, he did the same thing to Jeremy Lin when Lin was a Laker. You know, and I get it, like when you reach a certain level of success, particularly in American sports, like we write that off, like, oh, he just wants to win, it's just guys being guys. But I've always liked the fact that you know, whatever Randall's flaws are, like, blatant. Even now, in the middle of this great run that he's having, Randall will still have every game a turnover of some kind that, like, makes you want to jump. But, you know, that's going to happen with almost anybody who you build around.
And look, if the overall takeaway from that is he's putting up 24, 10, and 4, with, by the way, his turnovers are down to 2.6 per game, which I will more than take. Mm-hmm. This is his highest true shooting since he was in New Orleans, and he's being featured more here, which I think is, that was always the goal, right? Like, can we get New Orleans Randall, but scaled up, you know, and you've got that, you know, and it's working out well there. So, you know, he seems like a likable dude, you know, like it's just, you know, he had the thumbs down thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, it's funny, I was actually reading this article about alcoholism and, you know, how people, you know, a lot of experts don't recommend going cold turkey, but kind of tearing down, right? And I was thinking, like, that's kind of been a little bit some of Randall's worst tendencies this year have been, they still crop up. There's still games where he won't close out. There's still games where the shot selection, but it's the frequency is much lower. He had that Kings game. I don't know if you remember. But I was thinking, like, you know, his mental game really has improved. And I was like, oh yeah, there was the Kings game where, you know, he argued a legitimate complaint. They gave him a tech and he went to another ref and kept talking and got tossed out. It's like, you know, if you want to get the tech and, you know, make sure that they watch out for you going forward, you made your point. But to keep going, that's just hurting your team, right? Because now you can't play. But that, other than that, he's had two technical fouls. He's had four technical fouls for the entire season. And we're halfway through. Last year he had 12. So you can see that, like, these things are, and the turnovers are still there, and they're still at times ugly, but they're decreasing. The bad shots, decreasing in frequency. The lapses on defense, decreasing in frequency, and he's evolving into this player that, I mean, if you look at the team-building perspective, he's less of a fit issue than I think he was before. I think ideally you'd want someone like Jaren Jackson next to him. You'd want a stretch player, but he's working really well with Mitchell Robinson. Another thing we didn't mention before, kind of on that whole leadership note, there's an article, I don't know if it's SNY or who it was, but it's not Zach LaVine. That's I guess that's
it's not Zach LaVine. And part of what I think is important, particularly given Nick history, is that, and this is not a Dolan thing, this goes back to the 70s. Like, this is not a Dolan thing at all. But and I don't think the Knicks are the only team who do this, but they seem to be the best at it. Putting together two big names often is diminishing returns if the skills don't blend. So one reason why Brunson, I think, is so excellent on the Knicks this season is not just that in and of himself he's a great player, but the things that Brunson changes for Randall make Randall's job easier. The fact that Brunson is the primary ball handler, the fact that Brunson, particularly in late game situations, is someone that you can trust. I mean, Randall's assists are down, but so are his turnovers, like you said earlier. And a lot of that is because there's a better option to have the ball in those situations. And it allows Brunson's strengths allow Randall's weaknesses to recede. A lot of times when the Knicks bring in somebody with like, you bring in Carmelo, that doesn't help Amari Stoudemire's weaknesses in any way. You just end up losing something from him. When you bring in, you know, Glenn Rice, and you already have Allen Houston and Latrell Sprewell, you're not complimenting them. You're trying to cram a lot of stuff together that doesn't work. So LaVine, to me, would be another classic. If you added LaVine, even if it was a sweetheart deal, if Chicago just asked for, like, Obi, McBride, and, like, a couple of picks, and somehow the Knicks could do it and didn't disrupt anybody from their main rotation, it still doesn't work. Because once you drop LaVine into that rotation, you're going to be diminishing Randall. You're going to be diminishing Barrett.
You're spending basically your entire cap on those four players.
Yes. So, yeah, to put all that together and actually, I think, lower your ceiling while raising your salary cap, like, that makes no sense to me. I agree with you that I think there's a jumbo wing out there somewhere for the Knicks. I think I felt deep down one change. I've always thought that Randall and Barrett don't ultimately work together. I think Barrett has found his place and has been making it work. But I think ultimately for the team to make the next step, one of them has to go. And now my suspicion, now I feel more than ever like maybe that's RJ. Because if I could bring in Anunoby, for example, I would replace Barrett with him. And I would have now maybe Mitch, Randall, Anunoby, Brunson, and then maybe Grimes. And I would rather it's not about that I think Grimes is a better player than Barrett. I think he's a better fit with all that would go on there. So I think the big wing thing works to me, particularly if they're going to move off of Barrett. If you're going to plug in Anunoby and you're going to keep RJ, assuming all these people still want to start, I don't know that Brunson, RJ, OG, Randall, and Mitch, like, I don't find that much more exciting as a starting group than what I have now. But you put Anunoby there among some guys who can shoot. Okay. The big 4 or 5 thing I find really, really intriguing and really, really exciting. I don't know. I have no idea who's out there who fills that role. I have to take a look at the free agent listing for the summer, but I think it's the same. Positionally, I feel the same way you do. Those are the two places that the team would go. I think Randall at this point has probably cemented, like, he has a right to his spot, and you're going to have to find people to work in around him. And I don't know. When you think about that kind of a player, do you see that kind of player, particularly as a free agent, does that fit if RJ is still here?
Yeah, I think it can. It depends on, like, if you get a guy like Dario Saric and you give him minutes at the 4 or the 5, that could work, right? I think it depends more on Tibbs. Is like if we got Jared Vanderbilt, would he play him at the 5? A lot of coaches would. Would he play him next to Randall? That depends. If you want to tell me he's never going to do that with OB, I think that it's a little premature, but I get it. But there are good long defenders there who can play both those positions. Are you still not going to do it with them? Then it becomes more of a Tibbs issue. Do I think Randall and Barrett can't coexist? Not necessarily. I think the way that I think if they're both engaged on defense, it's a lot less of a concern because both are at least willing 3-point shooters. And no one wants to leave either of them open from 3. RJ doesn't really post up. RJ is more of a slashing guy. And so and Randall is also like, once he passes the ball, he no longer just sits in the post. He cuts out. Mm-hmm. So I think that they have to work a little bit harder and keep moving. But I don't think they're necessarily a terrible fit. Do I think they accentuate each other a lot? Not as much as you'd like, but I also think that chemistry has improved. And again, like in terms of we were talking about Randall's attitude or whatever before, I think that he's also been looking for RJ more consciously, and I think that that's looked a little bit better. It's just I think early in the season, RJ's defense was really bad, and that's what caused the issues. So,
yeah. So two last things I want to get into with you. One is the All-Star balloting, the early results are in. And there's been a lot of talk that both Randall and Brunson, I think, are in that broad category of players whose performance warrants all-star consideration. Whether they make it or not is another question. There's only, I think it's 15 guys on each team. So only 30 guys are going to make it in the whole league. So very good people are not going to make it. But the first round of votes came out in the East. Kevin Durant is the top vote getter overall. We'll do front court first. So you're the three players right now who are leading the voting in the front court are, to no one's surprise, Kevin Durant, Giannis, and Joel Embiid. So those would be the three starters if the voting holds at those numbers. The only other player who has an outside shot at breaking into that trio is, as you mentioned, Jaylen Brown's teammate, Jason Tatum. He's about 50,000 votes behind Embiid. After that, it drops way, 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 way down. So if we say, as a given, Durant's going to make it, Giannis is going to make it, Embiid is going to make it, so is Tatum. Here are the forwards. Here are the, we'll say front court. They do it now, front court and back court. These are the front court players in the East who I think will definitely make it ahead of Randle. And then there's a couple that I'm not sure. KD's going to make it. He's playing at as great a level as he ever has. Giannis is going to make it. Embiid's going to make it. Tatum's going to make it. The three who are, okay, we'll see. Jaylen Brown probably will make it because the Celtics have been that good. They're going to get two players. He would be the one. Jimmy Butler, his team is not playing well at all, but it's not his fault. He's shooting efficiently. He's putting up good numbers. And then lastly, Pascal Siakam of the Raptors. I could see an argument for Randle ahead of Siakam, certainly, because I think the Knicks are so much ahead of the Raptors that matters. For that same reason, I could put Randle ahead of Jimmy Butler, because again, you know, we know Butler's great, and we know the Heat probably at the end will turn things around. But for now, other than KD, Giannis, Embiid, Tatum, and Brown, is there another front court man in the East that I'm not thinking of who clearly deserves to make it ahead of Julius Randle? Because I don't see it. I look at the Cavs. I don't think Jared Allen is clearly, you know, more deserving of being there than Julius Randle. I don't really see it anywhere else. Do you?
So you mentioned Tatum. Did you mention Jaylen Brown? Or are you counting him?
Jaylen Brown is the one is the top of the, like, he's not one of the four top vote getters, but I think he's good. Like, I think he's a definite. He's going to get a spot. After him, so I think it's.
I would. Siakam's numbers are better. He's putting up 26. He's averaging fewer rebounds than Randle, more assists. Even with Randle's improved defense, you'd probably take Siakam's defense, although it's worth noting it has not been as good this year. I do think Randle's been more efficient than him, but not by a huge margin. I could see Siakam getting in. I think Jaylen Brown, just because he is... I mean, I know Celtics fans who would take him over Tatum.
He deserves it.
So he's at least 1B on the best team in the country. So that gets you to, what, six players, and that's kind of it? Or is it nine?
KD, Giannis, Embiid, Tatum, Jaylen... And who else was?
Yeah, how many forwards get picked?
It's different. Now it's all front court. So it's not forwards. It'll depend on how many centers. I would think in the East, your centers are going to be Embiid. I could see Jared Allen
all
making
just considered
it.
Forwards. When you say front court, they're all just considered forwards, right?
Front court is all bigs and forwards.
Yeah. So, and that's nine players, I believe, right?
KD, Giannis, Embiid, Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
No, I mean, there's nine spots for forward or for front court.
I guess, yeah, I would think so. I think there's six guards.
Yeah.
I think they do it like eight, four, eight, three, eight. I think it's, yeah, nine. There's a couple wild cards. I don't remember the breakdown, actually. Nine sounds right.
Yeah, so I think Siakam might not get in over Randle if it's the coach's vote. They might want to reward team performance. I have no problem with Siakam getting in over Randle. I will say, after watching last night, the guy, his thing of just like throwing his arms up and flailing and yelling is annoying.
It drives you nuts. It drives you nuts.
And he's producing at a high level. So it's him, Brown. Who was the third guy?
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I'm taking, I mean, let's see Butler's numbers, but both because of the Heat success.
Shooting very well, you know.
Yeah, but he's averaging fewer points, rebounds than Randle, more assists, but 5.7 assists, shooting worse from three.
Yep.
Less efficient. He is actually more efficient. Wow. Jimmy Butler at a 63% for shooting. I would personally take Randle.
Better defensively.
But 33. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, who could hate Jimmy Butler? That is just. I know that our coach likes him. But after that, even if you were to give those three, that's seven guards. There's seven forwards. There's still two spots open. And am I taking Jared Allen over Mitch or Randle? No, I'm not taking Jared Allen over Mitch, by the way, either. I would take the drums.
I love that the Allen Mitch rivalry still lives on all these years later.
Yeah, I mean, and like, it was particularly you know who it was? You know that woman, Kristen F., the Nets fan, whatever, on Twitter?
Unfortunately, yes, I do.
I hope you don't actually know her in person.
Know her. I think I blocked her. I don't know her at all.
I think I don't think she's completely all right. So I try to be a little bit understanding. But hers and other, like when Allen was a Net, that was a big thing. Jared Allen actually seems like one of the nicest dudes in the NBA, as well as being a really good player. I can appreciate him in Cleveland. That said, Mitchell Robinson's a better defender, better offensive rebounder. Allen has a more versatile offensive game. But overall, like Mitch rebounding this well on offense, like adds its own offensive dimension. So I don't think it's a question of Allen versus Randle. I think it's a question of Allen versus Mitch. I'm not taking Jared Allen over him. I think Nick Claxton was in that top 10 list. Not taking Nick Claxton over Randle. I don't think the coaches would either. Claxton is having a hell of a defensive season. But just on offense, Mitch is on another stratosphere. I mean, Middleton Mitch hasn't played. Mitch, I'd take Randle, of course.
Okay. No. When you said so and so was on a different stratosphere than Claxton, did you mean Mitch or Randle?
Randle. Mitch is.
Okay, you said Claxton. Mitch. I was like, is Mitch on a different stratosphere than anybody?
I will say the offensive rebounding is elite, and it's not just the rebounds. People are like, well, it's only four or five possessions a game, but how many times does that make someone hesitate on a contest? Right? How many times does that make it an easier decision for the guard? How many times does that prevent a rotation? So, I do think that his offense, like he's legitimately a good offensive player, even if it's, you know, he's not the most versatile guy. Robert Williams, am I taking him over Randle? Probably not.
Nope.
Hasn't played
hurt a lot too. He's been hurt a lot this year.
So when healthy, that is a really good player, but I'm not taking him. He's going through I'll even go through the Eastern Conference standings. Celtics, you know, you have two forwards there. Nets, you have a forward there. Bucks, you have a forward there. Middleton hasn't played. Otherwise, he might have an argument, but he hasn't. I don't think I would take Mobley or Allen from the Cavs over Randle right now. Embiid, so what are we at, five?
Yeah.
So that's five. The Pacers, I'm not taking Miles Turner over Mitch. Jimmy, if he comes in as a forward instead of a guard, that's debatable, but if you want to give that to him, so it's six. It's six.
That'll be six.
DeRozan's not getting in as a forward over Randle. No one on the Hawks is getting in as a forward over Randle. I don't think Kuzma was on that list. Kuzma's been playing really well, but he's not getting in over Randle.
No.
Yeah. OG Anunoby probably isn't. Siakam's the only one on the Raptors. And then, so Siakam probably is a no. Siakam is probably a yes, so that's seven. I think there's seven guys you can make a case for. But the rest of the guys who are on that list was Kuzma. I don't think Porzingis will get in, although he deserves to be in the conversation. He won't get in over Randle. Mm-hmm. Kuzma won't.
If they want another center, he deserves consideration.
Paolo Banchero is going to be an all-NBA player multiple times in his career, maybe an MVP. He's not better than Julius Randle yet. He got more votes than Randle. I looked at his numbers. Like he's really good for a freshman, for a rookie. He is. Just not at that level. Hornets, Hayward isn't at that level yet, and the Pistons are the Pistons. So Yeah, there's seven people in the front court you could make a case for, like whether it's advanced stats or whatever. But I wouldn't put anyone else over him. And a lot of the players I said were worse. Sorry, go ahead. The last thing I will say is the only way he wouldn't get one of those two spots if they're like, well, Embiid is the only true center, so we need to add one other true center, and I don't think Allen should get it over Mitchell Robinson. He might. But that's the only way. But even that is only one spot. So, yeah.
Yeah. So equally fun, if you look at the guards for Brunson, Brunson could get in. Depends how you want to read a few things. So I have right now the top two vote getters in the East by far are Kyrie Irving and Donovan Mitchell. No one is within like half a million really of those guys. So they're probably good to go. They're probably going to be starters. But after that, so after Kyrie and Mitchell, there's James Harden, who's putting up like 25 and 10 or 11. Tyrese Halliburton is having a really great year. Then there's this trio of guys who I don't know that they deserve it, but they might. And here are the guys. So Trae Young, I don't think, is playing really that well. But Trae Young, he's still Trae Young. He's still putting up the numbers that he's putting up. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if the coaches went with him ahead of Brunson. Whether it's fair or not, I wouldn't be stunned. Drew Holiday is putting up, like, pretty solid numbers. And he's a great defensive player. And he's on a much better team. Like, I assume the Eastern coaches would rather give Milwaukee two players than the Knicks. The other one, he's missed some time also. His numbers are better than I thought they were. He plays on a terrible team, but all-star is all-star. LaMelo Ball is the one other player that...
How many games has he even played?
LaMelo? How many games?
Yeah.
He has played. Oh, he's like the last one I looked up. LaMelo, this year, right now, has played... Come on, computer. Here we go. LaMelo this year has played... Oh, God. He's played 16 games. So,
yeah, I don't see
enough to say no.
Yeah.
He's put up 24 and 8 in those games. He's shooting an incredible per game. He's taking 11 and a half threes and he's making 38% of them. But like you're saying, like you would think that doesn't matter. You would think he has played not even half the season. But like, would I be shocked in any way?
Doesn't play defense on a good team. Again, I don't think, like, he's necessarily the kind of guy that other coaches want to go to bat for. But me personally, I love LaMelo Ball's game.
That's true. So if we scratch LaMelo, Trey, you know, we're probably not biased when it comes to Trey. Trey this year is scoring 27.5 a game, 10 assists. He is shooting 42 from the field, 31 from 3-point range.
Yeah, I know a player that did that last year and everyone hated him. His name was Julius Randle, so why should I?
Yeah, he's down. Everything is down with him. His
but he makes up for it on defense, right?
That was very cruel to do to someone who's sick, but also very funny. Yeah, so I would say Drew Holiday is a given ahead of Brunson because I think the Bucks easily deserve two players. I think they deserve two players way ahead of the Knicks. But even if we take Kyrie, Donovan, Harden, Halliburton, and Drew, that's five guards. I don't know if I'm missing anyone obvious. I don't think Bradley Beal has had like an all-star season, and he's missed some time too.
Van Vliet hasn't been good.
I could see Brunson. You know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Jalen Brunson could be an all-star. Well, I don't think it's either or a possibility. The Knicks could have two all-stars, as weird as that sounds.
There's the Bulls guards, right? So I don't think LaVine should get in over Brunson.
Didn't LaVine miss a lot of time, too?
Not as much as, like, I think he's played, like, 30 games, I think. Let's see. Yeah, he's played 35 games. So averaging 23 and 4. and no defense, still putting up. I mean, yeah, this is down your favorite game. Yeah, so he's still pretty efficient, but the team isn't winning. DeRozan, I know, took a step back from last year. He is at no, he's still averaging 26 points per game. So I mean, it depends on how much of those volume stats gonna matter. That's the thing. It would feel a little bit disingenuous if they vote Holiday ahead of Brunson, because even though Brunson has better numbers, they say, well, Holiday's on a better team, right? Which I would argue that, well, yeah, if you get to play in the with the best player in the world, then yeah, you will be on a better team. But then if you take the other logic and say, well, DeRozan and LaVine are a shitty team, but they have better numbers than Brunson, like, well, what are we doing here, right? So I think Randall is a definite. It's a little bit more murky with Brunson. One thing we didn't mention is it's unclear whether Butler will. I mean, do you know if is he on the ballot as a forward only, or?
Let me see if he's listed. Butler is on the ballot as a forward. Yeah.
Okay, so that's not so it won't be Butler. I think that there's a good chance to get squeezed either just because of Trey's name recognition.
Oh, this is interesting. Sorry, Jaylen Brown is on the ballot as a guard.
Okay. So Randall is a definite then.
Randall is a definite, but that hurts
Jaylen Brunson. Brunson, it's going to be tough. I would say of the guys you mentioned, Kyrie, Mitchell are locks. I do not
think. Harden?
He probably will be a lock. I don't think he should be, but I wouldn't have a problem with that.
What about Halliburton?
I am less high on Halliburton than other people, but he's averaging 10 assists on a team that's outperforming expectations. He'll get in. And then I think it's between Drew, and then I think Brown is a lock. So that's, I mean, yeah, if you want to talk about the Bucks getting two players in, then the Celtics definitely deserve both those guys in, right? So that leaves one spot between Holiday, Trey, and Brunson. Odds aren't great. So, I mean, I would put it at like as an even third between those three. If I had to guess, I actually still guess that Trae Young gets it.
I know.
But,
I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the best volume stats. And I don't think Holiday hasn't made the All-Star team since 2013.
Wow.
I think he is probably a little bit underrated. But yeah, like I think that's – which sucks. I think Brunson is playing as well as he could as an All-Star. But, hey, an extra week of rest, I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, like, unless people really – unless the coaches actively try to screw Randall and, like, put, like, Kuzma in over some or something, like, he's not missing the All-Star game.
I would not think so. Last thing I want to ask you, and I know that you're engaged. I want you to know that this is not me hitting on you. But what is your astrological sign?
A Virgo.
Virgo, okay. So I was looking earlier at the at the Knicks roster, and I was looking at birth dates because I'm a Scorpio, and I wanted to find out which Knicks, if any, fall into my birth range. And
when's your birthday?
One Nick.
Sorry.
November.
My sister's a Scorpio, so No, I was gonna ask your birthday, but then, you know, if you want to give that info in public, that's cool too. But my sister's a Scorpio, that's why I asked. So.
Well, there is only one Scorpio that I see on the Knicks, and that is Evan Fournier. So astrologically, that wasn't the exciting thing I was hoping to discover, but apparently Evan Fournier is the closest Nick to me astrologically. For you as a Virgo, there's a couple. You have Jaylen Brunson, Miles Mariota, Deuce McBride, Cam Reddish, my God, Trevor Keels, and if it does anything for you, Daquan Jeffries. There's a lot of Virgos on the Knicks. Wow.
There's a pretty easy explanation for that.
What is that?
In the dead of winter, in the cold times of winter, there isn't a whole lot else to do. And that is coincidentally 9 months before Virgo season. So
that's true.
Although I would expect more Scorpio. This is what I always make fun of my sister for this. Like, Scorpio is November, which is about 9 months after Valentine's Day. So I was like, yeah, you're definitely a Valentine's baby to my sister. So, and I guess you are too, Matt. So
I eventually learned my parents' theoretical origin story for my conception, and I didn't need to know it, but I'm okay with it. But it did involve, yes, like a winter storm and some family that had stayed over longer than they were welcome. And as soon as that family departed, there was a celebration in honor of that departure. And then 9 months later, there was the arrival of me. So for all of you out there, whatever your sign is, with a basketball reference.
You were the reward for your parents' patience and good manners.
I am the expression of a lot of stress, apparently, which I can definitely see, and which I carry with me with honor. But yeah, those are the Knicks. Those are your horoscopes. Stacey gets Jalen Brunson. I get Evan Fournier. Such is life. I'm going to leave it on this note because my throat is starting to tell me it's time to leave it on this note. But the Knicks' next game is Monday when they play against the Bucks, which is another big test for them. The Bucks have been kind of back and forth with some of their injuries this year, but I'm sure Giannis will be there. And it's a home game, which has become an interesting challenge for the Knicks in and of itself. But in addition to, sorry, I just want to double check who else they're playing next week after Milwaukee. They are also hosting Indiana on Wednesday. And then Friday, they will be visiting Kristaps Porzingis and the Washington Wizards, who have been playing. I mean, they're the Wizards, but they've hung in a little bit. That could be an interesting game. And hopefully, you know, Randall will dunk all over Kyle Kuzma and end that nonsense before it goes any further. So, Stacey, I want to thank you as always for being with us and providing your insights. That's all I have for now. Anything you want to say or sign off with?
Nope.
Stacey's done. I'm done. We're all done. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's good to be back on track with the Believe Knicks pod. We are presented by Bet Online. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody take care.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.